service is being recorded. The entire service recording will be available at password-protected member page on our website. Our prelude today is Chanson et Passe-Pied by Janine Roof, performed by Amber. Thank you, Amber. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Whether you're connected via Zoom or here in person, we are united as one community. I'm Rev Ralph, and I've been serving as your minister for the past 17 months. And will continue to do so until the end of January, this coming January. Some of us are bringing our best selves to this space, and some of us are bringing our struggling selves. All of us are welcome here, and all of us are loved. All of us are imperfect, but we're here to drop our defenses and trust that what happens in this space is powerful. It's life-giving. Together, we affirm that this day and our being together can make each of us braver, more compassionate, wiser than we were when we woke up this morning. We welcome you here. Let us move into the service willing to be authentic with each other, honest within ourselves, and open to connection in all its forms. Our chalice lighting is by Cynthia Landrum, and it's going to be read by Ron Fry.
In the bleak and cold winter, we gather ourselves in to light the flame to warm our spirits, to kindle the flame of love and hope.
Our opening music is number 122 in the Gray Hymnal, Sound Over All Waters, accompanied by Hamber. Please rise in body or spirit. Today's story for all ages is a video, The Shortest Day by Wendy Pfeiffer, illustrated by Jesse Reich. Children and adults are welcome to gather up around the front here and watch and listen to the story on the screen in front of you. Now, let us sing our children out with the recessional. As you go. Let us now join our hearts and enter into a moment of silent meditation. I'll ring the chime as we begin. Our presentation this morning is Embracing the Wealth of Our Religious Roots by Avalon Hakus. Avalon is a psychotherapist, a lay minister. She's been part of our congregation for at least 3 years now, and a UU for 30 years. It's a privilege and honor to have Avalon share her thoughts this morning. Welcome, Avalon.
Don't clap. You haven't heard what I have to say yet. As the holidays centered upon the winter solstice near, many of us find ourselves in conflict between the pressures placed upon us by our culture and our own hearts. Most of us have distanced ourselves from the faith traditions of our youth, and as their traditional holidays approach, we might feel a mixture of excitement and dread. Christmas seems to be dedicated to either outlandish consumerism or the remembrance of a great sage whose deification and date of birth are based more on myth than reality. Hanukkah, a relatively minor Jewish holiday, is blown out of proportion, I believe in part with the intention of helping children of that faith cope with the bacchanalia bestowed upon their Gentile friends. These adult realizations may be in conflict with the positive memories of our childhoods. We wax nostalgic as we recall family gatherings, gifts exchanged, and the once-a-year appearance of potato latkes or the Yule log, all the while cringing in the knowledge that the beliefs upon which these celebrations are based do not ring true. We struggle to uphold our values as we succumb to the pressures of a society imploring us to buy gifts, decorate trees, and attend parties, all in the name of theological ideologies we may no longer embrace. So today I'd like to explore the possibility of resolving that conflict and releasing any tension we might feel. Perhaps we can create a holiday season which is meaningful for us by consciously examining the religious traditions of our past and giving ourselves permission to choose what to keep and what to discard. This idea came to me during a visit to another UU congregation a few years ago. Just about every Unitarian Universalist congregation I have had the pleasure to visit has at least one service devoted to individuals sharing their paths to Unitarian Universalism. In every such service I have attended, participants begin by talking about the faiths in which they were raised: Catholic, Methodist, Jewish, Mormon, Universalist. Some talk about their experiences being raised in Unitarian Universalist churches. A relative few state that they were not indoctrinated into any organized religion and that their parents passed no legacy of formal religious training onto them. Regardless of religious background, however, the focus of individual personal accounts of childhood faiths are most often negative. This makes sense since most of us left our former faiths because of difficulties we had within them. Comments from some of the services I attended might sound familiar. The idea of Jesus as the Son of God made no sense to me. God is one. The God of the Old Testament, with all his fire and brimstone, went against my belief in a loving God. I found it strange that eating meat on Friday could be a mortal sin, but I found it impossible to understand what would become of all the people who had been condemned to hell for eating meat on Fridays once the church changed the rules. What turned me against the church was finding out that the ministers I admired for their social responsibility didn't believe in the dogma. They believed the miracles were symbolic, but they preached about them as though they were true. That hypocrisy got to me. And if there is a God, where was he when his people were being slaughtered by the millions during the Holocaust? We articulate our reasons for leaving former denominations and re-envisioning our spiritual lives through affiliation with UU congregations pretty clearly. But while I heard people emphasizing their disillusionment with the past, I also became aware of hearing something else, something like nostalgia, in a comment, however brief, about some quality which inspired them as children in their former faiths, which may even have prompted them to search for and join a religious community as adults. And I began to think it might be important to acknowledge these positive attributes of our former faiths. There are two reasons for this. First, when we separate the good from the bad and acknowledge the good, it frees us from feeling like we're losing something precious by having to let the whole thing go. Giving ourselves permission to keep the aspects of our childhood faiths that worked for us makes it easier for us to leave behind the parts that didn't. Second, when we voice appreciation of things we valued, we have the opportunity to integrate those pieces into our current religious lives. I became so intrigued by the possibility of creating this form of reconciliation within ourselves that I decided to conduct interviews with a variety of Unitarian Universalists to investigate if, in fact, there were things about our childhood religious experiences that we do honor and wish to retain. The results were overwhelming. With just one exception, every person I interviewed acknowledged at least one element they appreciated about the religion in which they were raised. What were some of those things? Well, first, many recalled the physical beauty of the churches and synagogues they attended as children. The stained glass windows, the magnificent organs, the candles lit to mark the eternal presence of God, or the memory of a loved one, each evoked a sense of reverence and awe that could be felt in the very cells of our bodies. The significance of having a beautiful meeting place for our UU services was illustrated to me by my daughter. She was raised a Unitarian Universalist in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Most of those years were before our fellowship owned its own meeting hall, so she, along with her father and me, attended services held in the Archilena County Extension Building, kind of like a big metal barn, the Pagosa Lakes Clubhouse, the Pagosa Springs Community Center, each very secular, plain, and nondescript. However, when we visited the Unitarian Universalist Church in Auckland, New Zealand during the winter of 2005, and she saw the organ with its impressive wooden pipes at the front of the sanctuary, the vaulted ceiling, the stained glass windows, and the century-old wooden floor, she exclaimed, "This is a real church. We are a real religion." When I look around and notice the way in which care has been taken to create a place for services which is both beautiful and welcoming, I think of how important beauty in the place we gather is to us still, if more modern than our predecessors. A second thing many of us remember from the past and continue to enjoy today as part of our UU living tradition is the inner peace and quiet brought about by a moment of silent reflection or longer periods of meditation during our services. One woman who grew up Catholic described the way in which her childhood recitation of the Apostolic Creed lifted her into bliss. In the years before her mind could understand the meaning of the words, they took on the monotonous tone of a mantra and brought her a feeling of peace. Growing up as a member of the Jewish faith and praying in Hebrew, a language I did not understand, a similar response was created in me. Singing in synagogue on the Sabbath washed away the chatter of my mind and introduced me to inner quietude. A third quality many of us have taken from our childhood faiths is the importance of a sense of belonging to a loving, supportive community. One man I interviewed remarked on the love he sensed between congregants in his boyhood church. This, he said for him, was a religious feeling. Another individual said, "One of the main things I got from my church was that adults were interested in me. My parents were kind of absent, so I'm glad I had other adults to mentor me when they couldn't." Today, a great number of us are members of the Unitarian Universalist religious community because of the friendships and loving acceptance we found here. A fourth quality central to our faith is the value of service to others, and most of us learned this in the faiths in which we were raised. One woman described at length her upbringing as a Reform Jew, where her religious education was very socially conscious. Her confirmation class spent its year studying civil rights. She learned to raise money for charity and to work in programs that helped others. She recalled her rabbi saying, "As long as one man is enslaved, no man is free." She remembered going through her closet as a child and sending what she wasn't going to wear anymore to refugees emigrating from Europe during World War II. She learned that giving was a part of life. When she discovered the same emphasis on social action among Unitarian Universalists, the transition to her new faith was an easy one. A fifth element of our religious past, which held meaning for many of those interviewed, was the youth group members attended as children and teenagers. A woman who grew up as a UU said she felt accepted in the religious education classes she attended. She appreciated the fact that there were no cliques and no one was an outsider. A man who grew up in the Methodist Church loved participating in social action projects with his youth group. He credits that early experience with helping to ingrain in him the value of social responsibility. But as you may have guessed, the element of religious experience which seemed to resonate most deeply with the greatest number of people was the music of their childhood faiths. One woman who grew up in the Church of Christ said that when she was young, belief was secondary. She loved singing the hymns. As an adult, she joined the Presbyterian Church and found great joy singing in the choir. Finally, as a member of a large UU church, she continued to find meaning by singing in the choir and participating in services in which music played a major role. A woman who grew up in the Dutch Reformed Church also talked about going to church, mostly because of the music. She sang in choirs and even as a child played piano to accompany the hymns. As an adult, she continued to play an important role in the music program of each UU church to which she has belonged. A third person simply remarked that singing songs during the holiday made the seasons of the year special, providing continuity and stability in what was otherwise a very tumultuous childhood. In our congregations, we draw upon so many positive attributes of our past religious experiences. We create beauty in our meeting places. Our services often include a time for meditation or quiet reflection. The sharing of joys and concerns has become a service tradition which cultivates the warmth of our compassionate community among friends. We engage in social action as individuals and as congregations, committed to creating a world that we learned to envision long ago. We support religious education programs for youth, where children have the opportunity to learn the values of our faith, securing our future. We include music in our services, singing a variety of hymns with progressive lyrics. As they become familiar, we find joy raising our voices together in song. Without denying the negative experiences that brought us where we are today, we can begin to acknowledge and emphasize the many gifts we were given in the faith traditions of our past. We can begin to release the vague or pronounced sense of discomfort we might feel at this time of year by appreciating the traditions we have intentionally preserved. As individuals, we can take pleasure in decorating our homes. We can appreciate winter for the natural way it seems to inspire us to reflect and look within. We can enjoy parties with families and friends and donate food and toys to help families less fortunate than ourselves. Finally, we can partake in the fun of singing some traditional holiday songs. In reclaiming the wealth of our religious roots, we can embrace the holiday spirit and find true joy this holiday season. Let's share.
Thank you, Evelyn. That raised a number of memories for me. And I wonder if you'd like to share something that may have been stimulated in your imagination. It is time now for our community to dedicate itself to discussion around the themes that were explored this morning, relying upon our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. Please come up and form a line here on either side of the podium, or raise your hand and one of our helpers will bring a microphone to you. Introduce yourself with your name and pronouns is welcomed. For all those on Zoom, please raise a virtual hand, unmute once called on, or you may type into the chat to have your comment read aloud.
Hi, my name is Barbara, she, her. I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and I had so many wonderful experiences there, and a lot of it did have to do with the music. I was in the junior choir and the youth choir, and we had the assistant minister was the choir director. He was so much fun. We had a blast. And also, this is a side note, there was someone in our congregation that owned an ice cream shop, and they used to bring little cups of vanilla ice cream to all kinds of events. But we would learn our part and be part of all the choirs coming and singing together. And it was so amazing. We did our part, we were separated. And then when you got in there with all these other choirs singing different parts, and we even had a paid quartet of four people who were spectacular. It was just so glorious. And when I sing hymns that were familiar from childhood, I use all the different God words that we originally used instead of, I don't want to say source, if it used to be God. So.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I think that focusing on our backgrounds and thinking about that in relation to the holiday seasons is very helpful. Thank you. I wanted to just, I've kept thinking, oh yes, I can remember connecting with my background, religious background, for each of the reasons you gave. And then I kept thinking, when is she or isn't she going to mention music? And so thank you for finding out that we are a part of the tradition from music too. My own background, as a few of you here, is with having grown up with just one minister, because it was my father. And he was a Methodist minister and my mother was Quaker. And so those dimensions that you mentioned were extremely central to what I guess, I don't know what the difference between my life experience and my religious experience was, because it was always there. We had to put up with my father being off at meetings every night and my mother taking care of us for a week or two when he would be leading a camp in the summer, because the other part of religion in our background was nature. That was central to my father. He would not leave Washington State to come visit us because he was already in God's country out in Washington in the mountains, and he was off leading camps all summer. So I think also the idea of sifting and winnowing is really important. And that my father actually encouraged, because every Sunday when we became teenagers, he would ask us what we thought about the sermon that day. And I realized that was, he really wanted us to think about it, and he really wanted us to be engaged. And that gradually led to me leaving behind a lot of what he was maybe preaching about and taking the best of what my parents gave us.
Gergese, he, him. I have a different recollection or experience as in my youth. My family was not particularly religious, but my mother was very insistent that we all go to Sunday school. And I remember sitting in Sunday school thinking, they expect me to believe all this crap? And then one day I had a revelation. Jesus is like Santa Claus. It's something adults want kids to say they believe in.
Hello, my name is Andy, he, him, his. I was raised by a long line of proud atheists, so Christmas was not much of a tradition for us. But I'll always remember the Sundays we would wander the woods, and our father would quiz us on plant and tree identification. I hated it. I did not want to get into it at all. As I got older, I really wish I would have paid more attention.
Hello, I'm new here. My name is Dori, she, her, and I grew up Presbyterian, which my mom was an atheist and joined the Presbyterian Church because of the music. And I remember being in confirmation class and saying, you know, I don't really believe in the divinity of Christ. And they told me, oh, just lie about it. So that part of my religious background was a little bit funny. It was a very liberal Presbyterian church. But What I loved about the church my mom joined was the music. And I sang in many choirs, and I felt like I had a strong musical education background because of the church. And I joined First Unitarian because of the music. You know, the family tradition, right? You join a church because of the music. But First Unitarian is changing, and I'm not sure if I still fit in there. So I'm wondering, can I join a church and be happy where music isn't central to the programming? And that's something I'm exploring right now, because maybe people are more important than music. What a radical concept!
Hi, my name is Daniel, he, him, and when I was young, I was in a very, very small Lutheran congregation, and in this very small Lutheran congregation, it comprised our entire community. It was 125 people. We had 122 people in attendance at any service, and Christmas was incredibly special to us. It was our entire community coming together, regardless of opinion, creed, you know, Republican, Democrat, and lifting their voices in song as part of that congregation. And the community that was there, we were there until I was in third grade. And it was an incredible feeling, not just on Christmas, but any of those holidays, to see all of that community come together. And the only time that I have actually felt that in my adult life was when we started coming here. So thank you for that.
I am Josh Turner, he, him. I've been coming here a couple months now. I grew up in a fundamental Bible church. It was, you know, basically everything was the literal word of God. So, but I was really into science and then ended up pursuing a career in science, and it's what I do right now. So, but I left the religious side behind, but then the last couple years have been trying to, like, you know, figure out how that fit into my story and how my way of thinking and stuff. And then I got kids and I want to have them kind of grow up in a community and have like these religious experiences, but at the same time not have the same type of religious experience that I experienced and struggled with for a while. But yeah, it's just been nice to kind of come here and have a community, and like that's probably what I missed most about like growing up back in the church. So, yeah.
Heidi Hughes, she, her. So Avalon, I felt like you were talking to me when you said, when you got to the music part, because I grew up in a huge German Catholic family. My father had 10 brothers and sisters, 45 cousins. We would get together every Christmas Eve, and they were very musical. And they'd all sing and in German, and we'd all play our instruments, and it was so comforting. And so this year, because there's been a lot of strife in my family with my older brother, I asked my dad, "Hey, Dad, let's sing Silent Night in German and start our celebration this like this." And so I hope we can pull it off. And I think it'll be a healing sort of thing.
John Grenant, he, him. Well, my religious experience was a lot of fun. I was the head altar boy for a big Catholic church. And I could take those bells, I could almost shake it, I could make more noise than anybody. And I'd take the incense and the, I forget the one you call that tool, and, I'd smoke them out.
Oh, I grew up in a Catholic family in Catholic schools, and what I missed is the Latin Mass, because we went to church every day and we sang the Latin Mass, and you're not going to find it anymore.
We lived in Hyde Park. Our family always attended the holiday Christmas celebration that the University of Chicago Rockefeller Chapel would put on. Children would come and they would be dressed up as shepherds, and our kids loved to have that opportunity. And it was always an honor for one of the or the children to be selected to be Joseph or Mary and ride down the long aisle of Rockefeller Chapel on a donkey that was brought in. And our daughter, Eliza, one year got to be selected to be Mary. And the problem was that the donkey people were late coming in. So she had to walk down the aisle, but then the donkey came and she was escorted back on the back of the donkey, but the donkey forgot where he was and laid a trail of on the long aisle of Rockefeller Chapel. And that was a memorable time of a holiday. So we have those memories, and it's great to be able to come back to those. They are a part of our history, and we should never deny those as part of who we are. Our offering this morning is the Tenant Resource Center. Provides a mediation between landlords and tenants and support for homeless people seeking housing. Our offertory is Cathedral Echoes by Mona Regina, performed by Amber. Thank you, Amber. Our closing words are written by Sherry Woodbury. Let us continue to grow as citizens of our communities, our nation, and our world. Let us work to build the common good for ourselves and the generations to come. May it be so. Our closing music, hymn number 126 in the Gray Hymnal, Come, Thou Fount of Every Blessing, accompanied by Amber. We have a few announcements. Next Sunday, Prairie member Karen Smith is leading our service with a celebration of the winter solstice through readings, meditations, and music that honor the darkness and welcome back the light. Today, after the our service, there's a visitor orientation. If you're interested in learning more about Prairie, meet in the foyer at the welcoming table. Also today after the service, Prairie's parents group, P-U-U-P-S, P-U-U-P-S, Hups, not Poops, is meeting. Families will enjoy lunch together. Their parents will meet upstairs for discussion. And let us remember that our neighboring congregation, Second Baptist Church, has invited us to attend their holiday fest in the lower level of their church building on Saturday, next Saturday, December 14th, from 12 to 2. And then that evening at 5:30 p.m., the annual Moses Gala is being celebrated at the Brassworks building at the Goodman Community Center. Are there any other announcements that we need to make? There are more announcements listed in the backside of your order of service. At this time, we stop the recording.